Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about next generation and future commerce technologies. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And today we are very pleased to welcome one of our first guests to the show, Scott Emmons, head of the Innovation Lab at Neiman Marcus. Welcome, Scott.
How are you?
You're doing good.
Glad to have you. Yeah, well, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and give us a quick summary of the Innovation Lab at Neiman Marcus.
Okay, so as you said, Scott Emmons, and the Innovation Lab is about 4 years old now. I came to Neiman Marcus back in 2003 and sort of done different roles over those years. And one of the things I did was founded the enterprise architecture team there, and we got to work. We didn't call it innovation then, we got to work on doing some foundational innovation in the stores with the way we did data and the ability to actually, sort of modernize our digital capabilities in store, which we didn't have a lot of when we started down that track. I think that work is what earned me the tap on the shoulder when it was time to do an innovation lab. So I founded that and have been doing that the last 4 years, and it's the best job at Neiman Marcus for sure.
Very cool. Yeah, it sounds like quite an adventure, and sounds like you get to do some pretty cool stuff just about all the time.
Yeah, it is a job still, so it's not always excitement, but I do get to do a lot of really interesting things and see a lot of new things. It's certainly never a dull moment, and we started down the innovation lab path, at just the right time where it was really, something that, as a retailer, we really needed.
Makes sense. Yeah. Right now with so much coming out, I think that an innovation lab is almost necessary for someone like Neiman Marcus.
Yeah. And I would almost say that you kind of caught the curve a little bit before everyone started, talking about and thinking in this space. And so to spool up a program like that internally at a company the size of Neiman Marcus is, I can't even imagine the amount of work and effort that went into that. And so you guys kind of got out ahead of the curve there. And because you have so much experience in retail and because you've been doing this for a long time and you started in the enterprise side of the business, could you kind of help us understand, like, what has surprised you in the last 10 years of retail, and what were some of the events or maybe some of the developments in retail that led you to head up the Innovation Lab?
Well, when we started the lab, and even before the lab, during that enterprise architecture sort of period, when I was doing things, there was not a lot of technology in retail. At least not in our stores. There was point of sale systems and kind of systems to help with inventory and that sort of thing, but very little else going on in the store. So I would say that just looking at how rapidly technology has become kind of table stakes, it's not an add-on and it's not something that's nice to do. It's something you must do. Has really been surprising, and we all expect change. I mean, that's part of life. But the pace of this change has really been quite amazing.
Absolutely.
Where we've gone, from once again almost no technology into the stores to technology is a recognized corporate core value now.
That's awesome.
It's quite a shift.
Yeah, I would say so. How it's incredible though to go from from point of sale and sort of just the utilitarian use of technology to run a business like you know, like Neiman Marcus, and then to go to, you know, Magic Mirrors. it's quite the leap. What do you think, if you could sort of prognosticate a bit, what do you think that the next 10 years looks like, maybe with your influence in the retail space? What can you see coming?
That's going to be a 10 years is going to be a pretty tough call. You know, sometimes it's hard to, you know, tell what's going to happen in the next month. Mm. You know, in the, you know, kind of the latest rate of change. The we know that technology continues to insert itself into the shopping experience. You know, and that it has to, and it's all part of that sort of, you know, I think natural blurring of the lines between the online retail business and the physical retail business. You know, we're already getting away from calling them channels because the lines are blurred. It's to the customer, it's Neiman Marcus, right? It's not Neiman Marcus online or Neiman Marcus in store. It's Neiman Marcus, the retailer. So,
Right.
You know, we continue to look for ways to use, you know, technology to bring, you know, some of the magic we can do with online into the stores. You know, and I think that's what, you know, a lot of the early efforts have been. But, you know, there's the flip side of that, too, you know, and that's bringing that high touch, you know, very rich experience we can deliver in the store and trying to deliver some of that on the physical side, or on the digital side as well, right? Pardon me. That was bad of me.
No problem.
Yeah. Not mute that.
We can edit all that out. That's not a problem. The good news is that nobody will ever, you can't say that you've missed a call or somebody, I didn't hear the call come through, because they know how to get in touch with you.
Yeah.
It's actually a really good, example. When we sort of started the show in the pre-show, we were working out the audio visual, issues and sort of getting synced up. And you said you had, our voices were coming through your Alexa in the other side of the room or through your Echo on the other room. And it's amazing how pervasive, this sort of next generation technology has taken hold in our lives and in such a quick amount of time. Do you think that you guys are just uniquely positioned to be able to rapidly implement this, these next generation technologies that come out of the innovation lab? Or is it unique to your business? Or is this just the speed of innovations happening so fast that everyone in retail is kind of getting on this new pace?
Well, yeah, I certainly don't think it's necessarily unique to our business. I think that, you know, the unique part for us was that, like you said earlier, that, you know, we sort of, recognized the need maybe earlier than, you know, some of our competitors, not all of them, and the ability, once again, to go out and execute a plan to, you know, adopt and embrace technology rather than, rest on our laurels, if you will.
Makes sense. Yeah. Another question I had, I think, how are millennials, and I use that word kind of with a little bit of disgust, because I think millennial is an overused term.
It's because you are a millennial.
I know, Brian, I know. It's a little bit lazy, I should say. But I'm going to go ahead and ask you, how are your younger, the younger audience identifying with the Neiman Marcus brand, and how do you feel like you're adapting to fit their shopping behaviors?
Well, I think that the lab itself is part of that, right? You know, and the recognition that younger customers are grew up with, surrounded by technology, fully embraced technology when it helps, solve a problem for them. And that's one of the reasons why, we think technology is so important is we think about, the next generation of customers. In our business, the luxury, retail business is sort of unique in that, to be able to, afford some of the things we do, right? You're typically kind of further along your career path and further along your
Sure.
arc, if you will. We're getting ready, in some cases for that next generation. And we're trying to, also be attractive, you know, to the millennial now.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. I think so. You know, what you're kind of getting at is, you know, I think it's more about how someone wants to shop on Neiman Marcus. Their age maybe is a little bit less important than you know what methods they use to interact with your brand.
I think it is, and you know, I think you see that. You know, when the younger generation adopts a technology, it doesn't really take that long for that to become pervasive.
Yeah.
Right. You know, when it's really good, when it really solves a problem, you know, then I don't think your age matters as much.
Yeah. So what would you say some of those methods are right now? What do you think? What you know, like you said, it doesn't really. No matter what age, you know, it sort of depends on what method, and certain methods solve problems for everyone. You know, those types of solutions. Which ones do you think that Neiman Marcus shoppers are utilizing most right now?
Well, you know, what started all this was the smartphone. You know, I think that's what you know started the current sort of tidal wave of. Change in technology and adoption of technology. So, you know, I'm sorry, it's not a, you know, a super secret, you know,
yes. We say it on every episode.
Yeah. Everybody's got one, right? And they just keep getting better and more capable. And, you know, I think that, you know, when that first started, right, you know, when the early iPhones and whatnot started to, you know, started wandering in our stores and customers' hands, you know, that was one of the warning signs, right, that we were about to be outgunned with technology if we didn't, you know, pay attention and do something about it. You know, I think that when you watch customers shop, though, you know, they're not, it's a myth that they're wandering around staring at their smartphones while they shop.
Yeah.
And, that they are, you know, looking, you know, searching the internet for the best deal and all that, you know, as they travel around the store, you know, what we observe, you know, or at least what I personally observe, you know, when I'm watching shoppers is what they're into is the, you know, kind of that act of discovery, right? You know, as they wander the store. And so I think that, you know, when we're thinking about technology, you know, one of the things we have to be thinking about first is how do we introduce technology that helps them with that discovery process, right? We're not trying to replace the physical experience. They already, you know, they got out of, you know, their house and, you know, got in their car and drove to the, you know, to the store, you know, to be in the store. So we should, you know, when we're putting technology in the store, we should be enhancing that.
Yes.
And one of the ways that you've done that, if I'm not mistaken, is the launch of your new in-aisle shopping app, the Snap app. And congrats on that launch, by the way. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so the Snap Find Shop, you know, which is basically Shazam for, you know, for us, for fashion, you know, it was almost science fiction, right, that it was even possible.
Right.
to do it right, and it just keeps getting better and better. So with that app, right, the customer can take a picture of a shoe or a handbag, right, and submit it, and you know, in a couple of seconds they get a list back of Neiman Marcus products that are either exactly like that or similar, right, to the product that they're looking for. So we eliminate the need to have to type in a bunch of text, right, to try to find something that we're interested in. We can just send the picture, and like magic, we can return back meaningful results.
And I think that that kind of speaks to a few things that we've been talking about. It's a great example of visual commerce. We talk about a lot of buzzwords on this show: conversational commerce, cognitive commerce, and visual commerce is something that I don't think that the retail in-store experience has been able to capture just yet. And sort of linking the in-store experience to the that in-store sort of that almost in real life to digital conversion, and I think that this app does that perfectly. How did you actually could you give us a little bit of the inside baseball on how that app came to be and how that how that whole project came into play?
And I'm going to apologize and ask that you repeat the question.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I was just asking for do you have any interesting stories of how that app came into being, and what the strategy was, and is it fulfilling on that strategy?
Yeah, so we're talking specifically about SnapFun Shop.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So SnapFun Shop is actually integrated into our Neiman Marcus mobile app. Rather than a standalone app, but you know, it's one of those eureka moments, you know, where I was someone reached out to me and said, "Hey, we can do this," and you know, I had a few conversations with the company, which is named Slice. That produced it. I was heading out to New York for the NRF, the National Retail Federation has this huge show in New York every January. And we had our VP over customer analytics out there, and I introduced him to the Slice folks in the, you know, our hotel lobby where we were staying for the show, and it became a thing. I mean, you know, pretty much right there, then and there, you know. We got the contractual stuff in place and began experimenting with the technology. We've been experimenting with it for about 2 years now.
That's fantastic. Sounds like it's been something you've been able to refine as you go. How have your customers been responding? How do you feel? Has it helped them, you know, do more discovery and you know, ease their purchasing behavior?
Yeah, no, we really think it does. And so we've continued to add categories of searchable items.
That's awesome.
To the system. You know, I mean, one of the learnings from this, right, was it was a completely new way to search, and it was not, in some cases, we had to, you know, kind of hold the customer by the hand and lead them through the process, right? You know, it's not, when you introduce something that's a completely different, you know, way to accomplish the task, in this case, you know, find the thing I need, sometimes there's a little bit of, I think, training, you know, to get users acclimated to this new way.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, of doing things. So, you know, so that was a learning that, you know, we got along the way. We didn't have everybody just pick it up, you know, at first, right? It took a
little, sure. a little adoption. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, no, it is such a revolutionary way to shop that I think, you know, it, of course, adoption is going to take a minute. You know, another question that I have is, we've seen the memory mirrors, and maybe you could just say a little bit about those, maybe before I dive into any questions about them. But I'm just curious to see if you have further plans to use in-store augmented reality, and you know how you sort of might leverage mirror technology in the future. And maybe even like are you guys planning to even do maybe an in-store AR app or something to that effect?
Yeah, well, so memory mirrors were definitely a slam dunk success, and not everything you try is that, by the way. But memory mirrors definitely, you know, sort of, you know, resonated, you know, not only, you know, with our customers, but I think with, you know, retailers and, you know, people around the world. I can't tell you how many places and times I've, you know, been asked to talk about the memory mirror. So definitely garnered keen interest from folks.
That's awesome.
Which, you know, it's a pretty basic concept, right? It's a really nice video screen. You stand in front of it. You take a little 8-second video of yourself, you know, do a twirl while you're standing in front of it. And what you get when you're done is the ability to play that video back so you can see with your own two eyes exactly how you look. You don't have to rely on your spouse or your girlfriend or your sales associate. You can see. You can do multiple try-ons and you can compare those side by side on the mirror. Once again, something that was not necessarily possible before. And then the third thing is that I can share those try-ons with anybody I'd like, friends or family, instantly, and get instant feedback, right, from my friends and family that can't be with me when I'm shopping, right, on, you know, which one's the best one, you know, which one's going to work best for the event or, you know, whatever it is I'm shopping for. So, you know, those three things, you know, are really compelling, you know, when you put them all together.
For sure.
One of the secret sauces that we don't talk about that much with the memory mirrors is that they use some image correction so that the image, you know, even though the camera's above the mirror, the image is played back as if the camera was directly behind the mirror. In other words, it plays back like a true reflection in a mm-hmm. piece of glass, mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, a camera that's looking down at you trying on the item. So we really have, you know, digitally recreated what that glass mirror had done for centuries, right?
Right. That's so great.
That's really interesting to me because I've wondered, you know, some of the technical challenges in trying to create that interactive mirror experience. For instance, you know, we've seen some of the other examples in the space that the mirror comes out looking kind of dull. You're never quite sure where to look or where to kind of, you know, it requires that element of training, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Much like you were talking about earlier there, Scott, it was the requiring some training on the end, you know, from the part of the end user. And I think that those are hurdles to adopting new technology. It sounds like you use technology to solve the training problems so that it was an intuitive process.
Yeah, I think that was one of the really great things about the memory mirror. You know, it once you saw it used one time, you knew how to use it, you know, for life, right? It was not complex. In fact, we actually, you know, when we first launched the memory mirror, might have had too many features, right, with the mirror.
Uh-huh.
You know, really, you know, as we kind of observed how customers were using the mirror, we reduced some of that to make the whole experience faster and less friction, and even further, you know, kind of refine that learning curve, right, where it was, you know, even simpler to use, as once again, you know, through observation of how customers actually wanted to use the mirror. Certainly, you know, we felt that the mirror platform, you know, as an apparel try-on was just one use case for it. And so just a couple of weeks ago, we released the sunglass try-on mirror, which is a countertop version. Same technology, but, you know, we've changed the UI to, you know, fit trying on sunglasses, which if you've ever done that or, you know, been with your spouse has done that, you know, you try on lots of pairs of sunglasses typically, you know, looking for that, you know, one that's just right. And so we built a, you know, a very nice user interface to help make that easier as well. And we partnered with MemoMe, the folks that built the big mirrors, as well as Luxottica, who is they supply lots of the sunglasses that we have for sale. And, you know, it was a great kind of three-way partnership to deliver, you know, another use case for the memory mirror. So that won't be the end of it. You know, I fully expect that you'll see additional use cases for that, you know, mirror technology coming as we go through this. Actually, the next several months, we expect some additional announcements in that area.
Nice. any of those announcements you can dig into right now, or do you need to hold off?
soon.
Okay, great. Well, we'll be sure to watch for that, and we'll definitely draw some attention to that once you guys do launch anything new via our Twitter feed.
So I guess that, you know, I completely ignored the VR and AR part of the question, you know, when about the mirrors, and you know, there are definitely virtual reality, you know, possibilities with the memory mirrors. We just have not, you know, we're trying to perfect, you know, the main use case first, but certainly MemoMe has already, you know, been showing color changing and pattern changing and all sorts of other things that you can do with the mirrors. And you know, I think if you think about, you know, virtual try-ons, that certainly, you know, is a future possibility, you know, with technology like the memory mirror.
That's great. We just spent our last episode almost entirely talking about body data and you know, virtual try-on and other uses for it. Do you see any other uses for, say, capturing body data and services that you'll be able to provide to your customers?
Instantly I would think about for the online customer, maybe being sure that I was delivering the correct sizes so that she didn't have to order, you know, three different sizes of a dress or a shoe. When she ordered it, she knew she was getting the right one. Be an example, you know, where I think that could come into play. And certainly as we think about, you know, VR getting better, we're going to need some body data to make that clothing look realistic, you know, when we are, you know, virtually applying it to you. Right. Just about everything, we have to think very carefully about, you know, privacy and other things, right? So, if you're going to be collecting that kind of data, you're going to have to be really upfront with the customer that you're going to collect it, and here's what I'm going to do with it, and here's how I'm storing it, and here's what I'm going to do to protect it, and, you know, all those things, right, have to be very, very clear. And so you have to, you know, I think proceed with caution when you have, you know, kind of very personal information like that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, one question that I have for you, kind of a follow-up then, would be, is this something that you guys would try to accomplish on your own, or would you bring a third party? Have you looked at any companies yet? Are you out that far, or is this still sort of just a conceptual topic that you haven't made any moves on?
It's a conceptual topic at this point. I would not rule out using a third party, but, you know, it would have to be the right third party, and they would have to, you know, adhere to the same rigorous, you know, kind of standards that we would adhere to if we built it ourselves.
Totally. Yeah, this might be, a little bit of conjecture, but how far out do you think you are from being able to leverage some body data or actually start making real moves on this?
Well, with the memory mirrors in place, you know, it would be, possible to do it, you know, I think today with that equipment that's in place. Mm-hmm. We've just elected not to.
Aha, that makes sense.
I feel like with the amount of foot traffic and the people using the mirrors today and the ability to share, there's probably a wealth of data that, you know, you have enough data you know, think about the marriage of the technologies that you are that you currently possess, and if you were able to link these technologies together, it'd be an incredible amount of data to learn about your customers. For instance, if you could use the same technology that's in the Snap app to sort of learn what people wear when they're coming to shop in your store and sort of get people's browse and their fit behaviors, or maybe even just from visual image processing, you could figure out, you know, size and fit. Those are all very interesting to me, and I they do raise very, very, very real privacy concerns. But I think if there's anything that Facebook and social media have taught us, is that people are willing to give up a little bit of privacy if it means that they're more connected, that their experiences are more personalized, and it provides greater convenience.
So
I think it's fair to say that, you know, everybody's different, and you have some people that are, sure, I would love to do that because it's going to help, you know, give me a better experience. Mm-hmm. And you have others that never want to do it. And, so you, like I said, you're upfront with it, and it's an opt-in, opt-in process. And customers that want it, you deliver them that experience. And for customers that don't, then we'll deliver them, you know, what they need a different way.
I love that. Yeah. I think we talked about this a little bit. Utilization, you know, once people realize the utility of opting in, you know, once that sort of overcomes the fear of privacy concerns, that's when you're going to start to see more mass adoption. And it seems like, you know, if you look at, like Philip mentioned, Facebook, it seems like people are very ready to maybe give up certain privacy, you know, certain pieces of personal information very easily in today's society. And so I think, it shouldn't take much for people to recognize how useful that info can be used.
I think if you are delivering value in exchange, then you have a compelling, you know, case for them to opt in.
Exactly.
Right. That's the key. And I think for such an established and well-known retailer and soon to be public company that Neiman Marcus is, all of these things are extremely important and, and part of a larger strategy, I'm curious, kind of moving away from that a little bit. You know, we talked a little bit about the in aisle digital experience, and I feel like there's such a big shift that I'm seeing. You know, you look at these, you look at the malls today, and the big box retailers are slowly being surrounded in our malls and urban spaces by digital pop-ups and showroom stores and different concepts that aren't necessarily playing in the same playground as you guys. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts about if the digital or in-store showroom sort of focus, like a Warby Parker or Bonobos, kind of a strategy is shaping your investment of your digital strategy.
Yeah, so that may be beyond my ability to answer for Neiman Marcus, right?
Oh, sure. But
I can tell you from my corner, of Neiman Marcus, certainly, there are interesting aspects to that. Do I see, from, and I'm giving you Scott Emmons' viewpoint, right? You know, at this point,
understood. Sure.
I don't necessarily see, we go ever all in with that, but there are places where that works, right? Especially if you think about, I have, kind of these, very large, stores, right? And sort of, the NFL cities, if you will, right?
Right, right.
But if I want to extend, my physical presence out to, areas that may not have, the population, right, to, support a full-line store, maybe that's one way we could deliver that, is that, that showroom experience. Maybe that's one way we could do, really interesting pop-up stores, for instance. Mm-hmm. That would be really interesting to me.
Right, yeah. And I think it's interesting to, as a consumer, having that ambient commerce, what we would call ambient commerce, or I would describe as ambient commerce experience, where shopping is coming to me wherever I am, and that sort of realm of convenience. I think of the shopping mall as a destination. It could be that, maybe I want to, when I go to Bonnaroo, or some other festival, maybe that's somewhere that I'm not expecting to encounter an opportunity for commerce. And this is kind of this would be a new, and an advantageous play to be able to get into those spaces.
Yeah. I think that's really, really exciting. Events like you just mentioned, right. Would be a really interesting opportunity. And places where, airports and things where you're, really a lot of times just trying to kill time, right? Maybe we could, help you, spend that time in a more interesting way.
That's good. Yeah, I think that kind of plays into something we talked about a few episodes back called passive commerce too, where you end up in a spot, someone's making a purchasing decision, they've been thinking about it for a while and then that particular product ends up somewhere they didn't expect it, maybe at a price they didn't expect it, and they just make the decision without ever having really thought that they were going to make the decision in that moment. So I think that's really cool stuff.
Yeah. I think that's where digital really comes in, is the ability to capitalize on, the term is the harvest of the intent, harvesting the intent to purchase. They've been meaning to buy, the Louboutins, but they've never actually just pulled the trigger. And if you as Neiman Marcus can be there and through some offshoot of the Innovation Lab or some other digital strategy, you can be there when they're ready to purchase, all the better, right?
Agreed.
Yeah. So there, you know, I'm kind of interested in a little bit about you know, your thoughts on you know, some of these emerging in-person you know, technologies around location. So there's, you know, all kinds of interesting things like in-store beacons and you know, contactless payments, those sorts of things that are being used, geofencing that are being used to sort of leverage you know, to gain data about consumer habits and consumer behaviors and also provide convenience for customers. What do you think are solutions in that space that are best in class, you know, for a retailer of the size of Neiman Marcus?
Well, yeah, so the whole micro-location thing is, you know, obviously fascinating to retailers. If, you know, if I can figure out, you know, exactly where you are when you, you know, need service, if my technology knows where you're standing, then I can, you know, I can personalize that experience even more, right? And that's, in the end, what we're trying to do. We've been able to, you know, do that very exact location, you know, as long as you were out under the blue sky for some time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you get inside the mall, then it all gets iffy. So the beacons, I think, are a stopgap, you know, way to do indoor GPS. You know, in a lot of cases, you know, I don't think it's the perfect solution, but it's one of the best solutions we have today, right? When you're, you know, not able to utilize full-blown GPS,
right?
To get an accurate reading of where you're at, to make sure that the messages I'm sending, you know, to you are relevant to your location. This is another good example of, you know, customers consider their location fairly private information, right? So this is another opt-in deal. You know, so, you know, you have to say it's okay, right, for us to do it. And sure. Then we have to be good stewards of that, right, and not overuse that information, right? it's going to have the opposite effect if I'm, you know, inundating you with, you know, location messages. As you wander about,
yeah.
So, for sure. you have to find the right balance,
and it can be creepy too, right? That's the you want to, you know, if I'm at Neiman Marcus, I'm looking for, you know, I'm looking for world class service. I'm not looking for world class annoyance.
Yeah,
and I think that's
no, I agree. So, you know, we want it to be magic, not, you know, not annoying. That's exactly right.
How hard is it to find the balance between magic and annoying?
It turns out that you probably do not want to message customers as much as you think you should. How about that? Yeah. Like I said, I think you have to tread very lightly with that stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Bill, do you have any questions on that topic?
No, I think we pretty well covered that.
Nice. So I've got an off the wall question. This is a little bit another kind of futuristic idea. How do you view kind of on demand and 3D cloth printing? Like, there's a Knitterate out there. I think there was a company called Electroloom. I think that project kind of fizzled. But do you think it's a viable technology, and you know, do you think it will be competitive to what you're doing, or just will it be something, you know, that you draw into your strategy? You know, what are your thoughts on 3D printing and sort of custom to you know, on demand sort of clothing?
So it'd be foolish to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, we've seen what happens you know, with technology. Just because it may not be good enough today for us, for Neiman Marcus anyway, doesn't mean that it's not going to continue to evolve and, you know, become something, you know, that is more interesting to us than maybe the state it is, you know, in today. You know, I'm thinking specifically about 3D clothes printing, which, you know, for the most part, still, you know, a lot of it looks kind of weird still, you know.
Right.
It's not necessarily...
it's not quite there yet.
it's not classic high fashion, right? You know, it's...
Right.
It's its own thing. So, you know, I think that it's going to, you know, continue to improve. And, you know, it's something that we're going to have to keep our eye on. And certainly, you know, we are keeping our eye on it.
Certainly, yeah. I think this kind of plays back a little bit to the body data discussion that we were having, because, I mean, the idea that we could, you know, use our body data and have clothes printed that fit us perfectly, and sort of eliminate the idea of size or custom tailor, post tailoring, and have that available for us on the spot very quickly with a ethically, basically created in an ethical manner. That's pretty compelling.
And if you think about it, I mean, bespoke is not a new concept to us, right? You know, we just didn't hand.
Right.
So if the technology gets, you know, good enough where we can deliver a bespoke, you know, outfit, you know, items for you, then, you know, of course we would, be interested in deploying that technology.
Absolutely. Well, you'll have to hit us back once you get to the point where you're ready to.
That's I would love to, talk about that. I personally think that like Scott said, I think it's a little ways off just in the look and the feel of it. It does definitely tend toward the dramatic. And so we would have to see a lot of innovation in that space, or maybe some adoption. You know, these things sort of surprise me. For instance, you know, I've always thought that interacting with bots online was just this really esoteric and sort of a geeky thing to do. But, you know, as we're being told every day, conversational commerce is here in a big way.
Oh, and, certainly think that's the, you know, that's this year's beacons, you know,
as
chatbot and, you know, especially powered, you know, with better and better AIs and so forth, right? You know, that there's going to be a lot of buzz about that for, you know, some time.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we'll see more and more retailers and service providers begin to interact with their customers in that way. And that takes us, I have this talk that I give called The Shopping Cart is Dead, which is sort of a bold prediction that we're going to be moving less and less toward, at least for SMB, not necessarily for huge retailers, but, you know, SMB is going to be trending more towards, as they've been moving toward marketplaces, there's going to be a democratization of commerce to some degree. And I think conversational is a great way to get there because we're going to be interacting in transacting in commerce outside of, you know, the normal branded portals that we see. And that's a really hard place to compete in. Do you have a conversational strategy that you could sort of tell us about a little bit?
It's pretty early on for us, so I don't think I'm ready to talk about it at this point. You know, gotcha. Let's just say that it's in the lab and that, you know, certainly, we're thinking about it.
Go ahead, Philip. Yeah.
Is there anything that you see out there that you feel like is a really great conversational experience that exists today that, you know, people should kind of be looking toward as the standard bearer?
Well, you know, it's early still, so I don't know if I have great examples. You saw, you know, as we began this conversation, you saw Alexa got in the way for me.
Yeah.
And she decided to intercept my audio here for my laptop that I'm sitting in front of. I think that, you know, the Alexas and Siris and Cortanas of the world have began to sort of train us, right? That, you know, we can talk, to this technology and, have meaningful answers and meaningful results happen, right? You know, based on those conversations. So, I think that there's, this is, V1.0 that we're still working with.
Yeah.
It's clear that, you know, once again, the kind of the intelligence behind, you know, the processing that occurs when I ask for something, still needs improvement and, you know, still needs to eliminate some of those awkward, you know, moments when you're trying to say something and, you know, the other end of the conversation doesn't understand what you're really asking for. Right.
Right.
Which we've all experienced.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think my follow-up is, maybe not from a Neiman Marcus perspective, but from a Scott Edmonds perspective, what aspects of conversational do you find that you feel like are going to be most useful? Like, is it more of a customer service or is it going to be, discovery, or where, you know, is it transactional?
I can tell you that, I think at least what I've been thinking about in our early phases of it is, for customer service, and especially for, simple requests like, where's my package, or
right,
is my alteration ready, or, things that, I don't necessarily, this chatbot, this machine, ought to be able to deliver, a great experience for the customer, right? And a very accurate, information for the customer.
Absolutely.
And you probably, most retailers of many various sizes probably have those types of systems already in place today. If I wanted to find, where my package is or what the status of my order is, I'm pretty well accustomed to signing into my account and looking at, the status of these things. I think it's more about sort of 15 years ago, we would have probably called it a mashup. It's, just making this data available to the systems that, will provide them. I think the problem for me right now is that the systems that provide them are owned by a couple juggernaut companies that typically compete in the direct spaces of other retailers who, probably would most benefit from the technologies. So, I think that's a big hurdle that we'll have to get over. Go ahead.
It's definitely a piece of the puzzle, right? And that is, who's providing the technology, right? And, how much information, by having that middleman, how much information, are they getting out of that relationship?
Right. Do you really want Amazon?
it's a concern, I think. So,
sure.
I think everybody's once again sort of, everybody's experimenting, but they're, also being cautious about it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, with that, I think, we kind of wrapped up most of what we wanted to cover. What near-term recommendations would you make to our merchant listeners? Like, what if you could say, if take your budget that you have for tech and throw it at these things, what would those things be for the short term? And then maybe a little bit long term also after a short term recommendation, sort of a practical thought. What about the next 5 years? What would you say that they should put their money into?
Yeah. So in near term, I think we've discussed, quite a bit, what's important. I think near term, conversational commerce, as you call it, is something that you should be thinking about, and that, AR and VR are, going to play a part probably in your business at some point. So you ought to begin investing, in some early experiments and, getting smart with handling those kinds of technologies and having the, back-end systems that are required to deliver that kind of technology. I think that you shouldn't lose sight of the tech, when you're thinking about technology in your store, right, you need to be thinking about technology that really solves, a problem for your customer. Mm-hmm. And that new and, shiny doesn't last very long if it doesn't actually make something better for the customer experience. It'll be interesting and there'll probably be some buzz about it, but it's not going to last very long if it's not really making their experience better when they're in the store. So, I think it's going to be tough to, cast a wide net of, specifically what you should be looking at, when it comes to technology for your stores over a 5-year period, because we don't know what we don't know. And there's, things on the horizon that we don't know yet. They're going to come, right? They're going to be breakthroughs that are going to be game changers. I think that you have to, you have to build an organization, that's willing to adapt and be agile and, have innovation as a core value and not be afraid to try and fail, which is really easy to say and it's a lot harder to do. I can tell you from experience, it's kind of a different way of doing business than a lot of us did, in our case, we've been around for, more than 100 years. Right. And, we've done lots of innovative, things over that 100 years, but, not necessarily at the pace that we're being asked to do it today.
Right.
So it takes kind of a different mindset to, be willing to, go out and do these many different kinds of experiments and to fund those things as well, right? It affects, all areas of the business.
Love it. Great advice. Be agile, make innovation a core business value, and be ready and willing to fail. I think that those are really great pieces of advice. Philip, do you have any final notes or questions today?
No, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, Scott. And once again, Scott Emmons, thank you, for being here, head of the Innovation Lab at Neiman Marcus. And, is there a site that we can point people to learn more about the Innovation Lab?
I don't have a specific site for the Innovation Lab. So, I can tell you that if you go to your favorite search engine and search for the Neiman Marcus Innovation Lab, we've generated quite a bit of, mm-hmm. press and coverage about the lab. There's no shortage of information about things that we've been working on out there. Mm-hmm. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and, people, are welcome to, check in and link in with me, and, I'd be happy to, answer specific questions as well.
Do you have any speaking engagements coming up in the near term that you could pump a little bit?
I don't have anything local in the – I'm going to be at shop.org. There's going to be something called the Retail Innovation Lab. The Retail Innovation Lounge. And I'm going to do a little presentation there. That's coming up at the end of this month.
So that's great.
Awesome.
Dallas, for the shop.org event, which is a huge retail event, I encourage you to come by and check it out. Check out the Retail Innovation Lounge.
Great. Well, thank you. And we look forward to having you around again. Thank you, Scott Emmons, head of the Innovation Lab for Neiman Marcus. And remember, you can always listen to the latest episode of Future Commerce and go ahead and subscribe. Check us out on iTunes. And while you're at it, if you're listening on futurecommerce.fm right now, click on the episode title, scroll down to the bottom, and leave some feedback. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode and maybe some of your questions that you might have for Scott that we could pass along. At any rate, thank you for listening, and until next week, keep looking toward the future.
Thanks again, Scott. See you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.